Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
A school filled with innocent children and caring teachers became the scene of terrible violence, hatred, and evil.
Any proposal from Republicans that cuts legal immigration over time, maybe even in half, or it's a non-starter. We're going to need more immigration, not less.
I don't believe in dark money. I think it pollutes our system. I think it does great harm to our system. And if it was up to me, only a living human being could give money.
There's really nothing more effective at cleaning our air than getting big companies to provide at least 50% of their total electricity from renewable resources by 2030.
And joining us to talk about where immigration reform stands in the Senate and whether changes are coming to the Arizona Independent Redistricting Commission, among other topics, are John Gabriel, editor of Ricochet.com and USA Today contributor, and Andre Cherney, former chair of the Arizona Democratic Party and author of The Candy Bombers, The Untold Story of the Berlin Airlift. Guys, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Andre, quick reaction, first of all, as someone who worked in Washington, what are your thoughts about where the Senate's going here? Mark and I had some conversations in the first hour of the show today. Everyone seems to be on the dreamer's side, with a few exceptions, and yet still nothing gets done in order to get some reform going there.
Well, that's a pretty good theme for a lot of these issues that we're facing, is there's vigorous agreement and total inaction. And this is, I think, really a moral crisis for the country. I mean, these are people who are, but for a legal technicality, Americans, who came to the country as children, who know no other land, who are our neighbors, who are in our military protecting us, who have built families, who have paid taxes, and are being ripped away. And the fact that, let's be honest, that the Trump administration and Republicans in Congress have been playing politics with this issue is a true tragedy for a lot of human beings that we should be celebrating.
John, it seems strange. Again, we've heard a lot of Republicans who've said that they really support the Dreamers and they really want to do something. And President Trump is even in a different category, so that's maybe more difficult to characterize because he can be a little inconsistent on certain things. But when it comes to actual Republican senators, does it surprise you at all that they can't get to 60 with the Democrats?
Seeing this Congress operate doesn't surprise me, but that doesn't make it any less appalling. They had several votes yesterday. All of them went down. You need 60 votes to pass. None mustered as much as 55. And a lot of these plans are extremely similar to each other, and you would have Democrats almost all voting for one, Republicans almost all voting for another. And it's just frustrating, and we've seen this time and again with any way to fix the healthcare system, you see this too. Everybody says, yes, we want this, and nobody actually can get it over the finish line, which is really disappointing. And the thing that's interesting is with Republican control of Washington, D.C. right now, it is in their interest, more so even than the Democrats, I think, to get something passed, some kind of a DACA fix, something to help out the Dreamers, if nothing else, just to counteract the atrocious press Trump and the rest of the party as a result has gotten from the scenes of people pulling fathers out of their jobs. And it's a pretty ugly scene. I would like to make sure that legal immigration is reduced. However, as we all know, these are kids who did not choose to be here. And if you arrived here at age 2 and you're now 30, you don't want to see immigration ICE agents busting through your door.
John, what impact do you think the president's announcement that he would veto particular proposals had? I mean, do you think absent that, something might have gotten to 60?
I think it might have. I don't know if it would have gotten all the way there because they seem so dedicated to gridlock, even though Republicans control everything, which seems odd, that somebody would find a way to poison it. But him jumping in saying he was going to veto it, it did kind of poison the environment and once again just stoke partisan tensions.
Andre, how much of a difference does the president make in this situation in terms of even saying, hey, this looks good or this doesn't look good, as opposed to what Mark referred to, which is sort of, yes, we didn't actually hear him say he would veto it, but behind the scenes, people know that. Is there a direction? I think some people downplay the president's words on various things because, again, as we said, we're not really sure what he's going to say from day to day. But when it comes to this issue, is there a lack of leadership? Whether people agree with that leadership or not, is there a lack of a real focus on what we should do one way or the other?
Well, sometimes a lack of leadership is a form of leadership, if you will. And so what the president's words and his inconsistencies make a huge difference here, because people are, especially in the Republican Party, afraid of walking out on that plank and seeing it sawed out behind them. You saw a president who last year and into this year saying, we need to fix this issue, we need to address this issue. And you had a bipartisan group with Lindsey Graham and Dick Durbin and many others saying, okay, we're going to come together. Here's a solution. They get to the Oval Office and with the excitement of saying, okay, we figure this out. And he says, nope, not going to do it. Unclear why he makes a decision one day versus the other day. But because of that, a Republican Party that is afraid of his next tweet and his followers voting in a primary is going to be hesitant to take any real positive action.
So, Andre, what happens next? I mean, the deadline that we all have heard about is March 5th. We're still a little ways away from that. Is there any hope of something happening between now and then?
Well, there's always hope. And you have to figure that this is such a huge issue facing so many people and an area where there should be such bipartisan consensus that action will happen. But in this current environment, in this Congress and in this administration, you can also really have a fear that there's going to be just such a bouncing back and forth that the deadline will pass. I still believe that action will be taken and that this problem will be solved just because of the magnitude of thinking about what happens if we don't do it.
John, what do you think?
I agree that something will be done. If nothing else, you would have Trump just say, okay, I'm going to extend the I'm not going to make any actions on DACA for the next year or something like that, just to get this out of the headlines before the midterms hit. But it's very disappointing. I'm no longer a Republican. I lean to the right, but just to see this party that should be able to move forward principles with a completely unified government, it's disappointing in telling them they aren't getting it done.
And speaking of inaction, we'll talk for a few minutes about the tragic event that happened in Florida, a school shooting earlier this week. And, of course, there's always the clamor of, you know, stop talking politics because of a tragic event. And, okay, but for our purposes, I want to talk a little bit, Andre, first of all, about we have seen Sandy Hook. We have seen the Gabby Gifford shooting at Tucson. We've seen countless shootings. And nothing seems to get done in Congress. And I wanted to get your theory on that. Is that because of the all-powerful NRA, or are we actually seeing lawmakers who really just don't know what to do or don't really want to do something about it?
I think it is a power of the NRA. We're going to talk maybe a little bit later about campaign finance and think about why something like this happens. We were just talking about immigration. Here's another area where there's actually broad national consensus on some things that just make sense. We're not talking about taking people's guns away. We're talking about common sense regulations. Background checks, something that there's bipartisan consensus on, saying that if you're on the terrorist watch list and you can't get on a flight, you shouldn't buy a weapon. Here we had a killer who was banned from having a backpack. He was at age he couldn't go buy a Bud Light, and yet he walked into a store where he bought an AR-15 legally. A weapon that up to a few years ago was banned, and the same weapon that was used in Sandy Hook, that was used in Las Vegas, that was used here, that was used in the Blaze murders in Orlando. There are areas where it just makes sense to take action, and we are experiencing something in the United States in terms of these kinds of mass shootings that no other country in the world is experiencing. There have been 18 school shootings worldwide in the past 20 years, leaving out the United States. There have been 18 in the United States just in 2018 alone. We're in February. We're in the middle of February. So there's no reason that public policy can't take an action to at least reduce some of this unspeakable tide of death.
John, is there incremental progress that can be made on this? Is there, because it seems that when the argument happens, there are two general camps. One is that it's the fault of the guns, or this person was mentally ill, and those may in fact intersect. But when it comes down to it, is there, as someone who again leans right on this, as someone who is in our military, how do you feel about this? Are there incremental steps that even if you're a gun rights supporter would still, hey, this makes sense. Let's make some changes here.
I think the outrage is so big for this thing. I think you are going to see some moves in Congress. I know there's a bipartisan bill. It's passed the House already. It's going to the Senate to really button up the background check system, which has a lot of flaws. It was introduced after the Sutherland Springs massacre. When I was reading up on that, I'm like, wow, that seems so long ago. And it really wasn't long ago at all. So I think that's one good area that can be tuned up and can help and has bipartisan support. Another thing, too, is I don't hear a lot of people talking about age limits for purchasing these things. As you say, this guy cannot get a Bud Light, probably can't get a pack of cigarettes. However, he can walk in and get a gun. I think there are a lot of things after the Las Vegas shooting, bump stocks. There is no reason on earth for these to be around. And I think most people, and I would say even most NRA members, are like, oh, yeah, we can do all those things. So maybe not the people running the organization, but the membership. I think there are common sense thing. We also, too, just need to look at following up since the FBI is known many of these shooters and didn't really follow up. We don't know the circumstances. Might have violated their rights, but look at that. But also, too, the mental health thing I think is important. And in Arizona, we see that a lot, just our flawed system to help out people with mental health. That's greatly concerning as well, especially for younger boys.
John, you mentioned bump stocks, and there was a lot of talk about that right after the Las Vegas shooting. And perhaps predictably, in the weeks and months that followed, there's been almost no talk about that. Is this one of those issues where somebody needs to keep the pressure up? We've talked about the Dreamers who are in Congress. They are talking about this a lot. Is there some constituency that really needs to try to put the pressure on members of Congress to keep this in the news and hopefully not because of another tragic right. shooting somewhere?
Yeah, I think another thing, too, is like the Las Vegas shooting that was in the news for a week and then just gone. I think it's something that all citizens need to keep up on. And especially, too, I think it's important for, say you're a registered Republican, talk to your Republican representative or senator and say, hey, we got to do something about this. You know, I'm not this wild-eyed progressive trying to take away everyone's guns, but we need to put a stop to this. And, you know, I have a couple daughters in school. And, you know, they have their lockdown drills and, you know, we're getting emails about, okay, here's how your kids should respond. And it's deeply unnerving to get those as a parent.
Andy, briefly before we break.
100% agree. We saw this Las Vegas shooting, worst mass shooting in American history, and just a few months ago. And there was a broad consensus. Let's do something on the bump stocks. A small, small step. And as John said, most NRA members agree with that. But you have an organization that is providing millions and millions of dollars of campaign contributions to key senators and key members of Congress who says no and nothing happens. And this gets to the heart of the failure of our government to take action in an area that Americans really are coming together and united on.
That's Andre Cherney, also here for the Friday Newscap, John Gabriel. We'll continue with our discussion right after this on the show. Good morning. Thanks for listening to the show on 91.5. We're in the midst of our Friday Newscap segment here with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. And joining us as well, John Gabriel, editor of Ricochet.com and a USA Today contributor, and Andre Cherney. He's the former chair of the Arizona Democratic Party and author of The Candy Bombers, The Untold Story of the Berlin Airlift. Andre, let's move to the state legislature. And one issue that has popped up that has been a bane of existence for many Republicans in the state, at least this time around, before it was the Democrats, is the Arizona Independent Redistricting Commission. One proposal that has come up during this session is to add 3 members to the 5-member commission because a 4-4 tie will force bipartisanship. That's at least the theory. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, as you mentioned, I was former chair of the Arizona Democratic Party, and I was chair during the time we went through this last time. Last time we went through the redistricting. Just to remind everybody of what we're talking about, back in the year 2000, the voters of Arizona said, we're going to take redistricting out of the hands of the political parties and out of the hands of the politicians, put it into the hands of an independent commission that is chosen by the same way we choose our independent judges and so on, so that we actually have districts that are about competitiveness and not just about politicians drawing lines to help themselves and help their political party. Now, this is public radio, but I'll admit I'm not great at math. But I know that if you add 3 to 5 and you get 8, that means you're pretty likely to have an even number. And those, I was told, are ones that get split evenly, which makes it hard to have a decision. What happens if you don't have a decision under this new rule? Well, it goes into the hands of the state legislature. Surprise, surprise, surprise. This is a pure partisan political power grab. And it's about nothing more than that. And it's about politicians saying, we want to draw the lines so we can help our political party. It disenfranchises not only Democrats, not only independents. It disenfranchises people across the political spectrum who want competitive races and who want districts that actually make sense for our governance, not just for one political party.
Well, I thought we were supposed to disagree about one of these issues, but yeah, I pretty much agree. I think the main concern is that it's an even number, and determining who is actually independent or just, would it be, I know, independent in name only? you don't want them monkey around with that. It's always going to be a contentious issue, and I think if they upped it to 9 and, you know, the majority of those were independent, you still have a lot of power plays going on behind the scenes. It's a very important thing, redistricting, and you're always going to have the party, whether they're in power or out of power, trying to work the system to their advantage. It's kind of human nature, especially when political power is on the table. So I think that the idea to get more independents in there is a good idea. How it work in execution remains to be seen.
Andre, how do you think this issue fits into the larger discussion that this country has been having about redistricting and gerrymandering, and there's maybe this math formula now that can, you know, detect if there's political gerrymandering versus racial gerrymandering? How does this potential change to the way Arizona draws its maps compared to what's going on in the rest of the country, do you think?
Well, this is, as John was indicating, this is an age-old question, right? Gerrymandering, Elbridge Gerry, 200 years ago, was a lieutenant governor in Massachusetts. So, you know, this is something that's always been the case, but I think we've seen this movement here in Arizona and California and other places to say, let's not have politicians draw these maps. Let's actually draw them in a way that builds competitiveness, that goes along with what the laws say when it comes to racial diversity and so on, and to try to have a system that actually makes sense for the citizens and the voters and not just for the politicians, this would be just a huge step in the wrong direction, because even though there's, quote, more independents, the independents are chosen by the political parties, which those aren't real independents. Those are independents in name only. We need something that is going to take a state where now the majority of voters or the plurality of voters are independent, and they don't have much of a say in the political system when it comes to elections that are only getting decided in a Republican primary or a Democratic primary. Let's empower them and empower more people so that we have a broader number of votes and voices in our political system.
John, is there any reason to believe that depending on how certain court cases come out, that the Arizona legislature might do a better job of drawing district boundaries?
They could. It's such a murky area with all the numbers and polls and surveys that go into it. My concern as a voter, I've never been involved with a redistricting process, thank the Lord above, but as a voter, what I would not like to be in is a district where everybody looks like me, they're approximately the same income level, and I think that really distorts our democracy, and it balkanizes voters into their camps and divides people more. I think if you have districts designed in a way so each politician needs to appeal to people on both sides of different backgrounds, of different income levels, that's a positive for democracy, and you're going to get better representation.
John, one last chance to disagree in our last couple of minutes. The legislature is also taking some steps. I'm just going to label it as more dark money related legislation in terms of what can the voters, what can the general public actually know about who's giving money and to what and why. And the most recent vote we saw, there was only one Republican in the state house that decided to say, I don't like dark money. I think we should open this up. Where are we heading on this? I mean, because people are very scared about the influence of utility companies or other big businesses that come from out of state to put money into our elections.
I really don't think dark money is going to change. I'm actually in favor of people being able, now I'll disagree, being able to give anonymously if they see fit. Especially, we've seen a lot of backlash to a corporation or an individual, especially in California, for contributing to the wrong campaign or something that's unpopular. So I'm definitely against that. As long as they follow the law. But I think especially with Republicans running things, that isn't going to change. One thing to note, though, with as far as dark money goes, I know in the 2016 national campaign, Hillary Clinton had something like 250% of the dark money spent on supporting her as opposed to Donald Trump. And I think dark money might be the future, for better or worse, just because the political parties, if you look at their fundraising, they're fading in importance. And people are liking these targeted groups that will focus on guns or women's rights or whatever the issue might be. And parties are continually, one reason Trump won the primary is the parties are very weak organizations. They seem to be getting weaker.
Andre, in our last minute, I think I'm going to tee one up for you here. Why is it that the voters, the general public, shouldn't know who's giving money and why?
I can probably take the minute and try to think of an answer to that, but we'll have a lot of dead air time. There's been a lot of people who have been conservatives, Republicans, saying we shouldn't have campaign finance limits and you should be able to give however much you want. It's a free speech issue. But they've always said, well, but at least there should be transparency and people should know where that money is coming from. Here we're having the worst of both systems, and you're having people contribute anonymously, try to push their own agenda. Why shouldn't people know? You're right. That is the question. You've had this current set of issues before the legislature is about a local government here in Tempe with City Councilwoman Lauren Kuby leading the fight. And we've had people like Terry Goddard leading the fight statewide. But they've been saying, let's have our own rules. And you've had the state legislature say, no, we're not going to allow that. Again, no reason for that other than the fact that they're getting a lot of money to win their own elections. And it's something that really subverts our very democracy.
Andre, you've got the last word. And Andre Cherney, former chair of the Arizona Democratic Party, author of The Candy Bombers, The Untold Story of the Berlin Airlift, and John Gabriel, editor of Ricochet.com and a contributor to USA Today. Guys, thanks very much for the conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And the show continues.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.